Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Okay, gang, it is time for another edition of Football 52 with UNC head coach Ed Lamb. We're recording this on a Friday. We switched up our recording for those folks wondering why a podcast didn't come out on Wednesday. We're doing Fridays for, what, June and maybe July, Coach?
Yes, just for the month of June and July, I asked if we could move this to Friday. Fits a little bit better with the schedule, so thanks for accommodating.
It works out, you know, and you got to jump on with the fellas this morning on Good Morning NoCo. So we're still keeping, you know, your radio day stuff, but we just moved it to Friday. So it'll be good.
Yeah.
Players got back in action earlier this week too, Coach. So you guys have been practicing, rolling. What's that been like? What's kind of stood out to you so far?
Well, what we look for right away is like the intention that the players have to be really good, right? There's always going to be a lot of excitement first day. The guys are excited to see each other and coming back to start training. Football's important to everybody, everywhere, every team, right? But how important? And, is the intention not just to have a good time, not just to be back and playing football, not just to make your plays and your stats, but the intention to actually be good. And so we're looking for guys like holding each other accountable in a positive way. We're looking for that, you know, is the first play executed with the same intention as the 30th play? We got 30 plays of, you know, what we call walkthrough, but it's at a run. There's just no contact.
Yeah.
And I thought we had that yesterday, and that's not surprising to me. I've really been most concerned, with myself this whole past offseason, because as a coach, I really think one of the important things for me in my style of doing things is to look for opportunities to insert myself organically where needed, right? And so from a leadership standpoint, for example, if we have excellent team leadership, strong team leadership, then the more the coach is kind of trying to exercise his own authority and leadership, the more you're kind of retarding the process of the players being the leaders, and the best teams are truly player led, and yet as a coach, it can be easy also to kind of shirk our responsibility to lead, and that's really what I've wrestled with for the last several months. Is yes, we have the strongest, most committed player led team that I've had in my time here. And yet, am I ready, and do I recognize when I need to step forward and also lead in addition to those players?
That's got to be one of those things that is, it's a good problem to have compared to where when you started with UNC, it's like there's a lot of work here. There's a lot of probably micromanaging, because you don't know a lot of the guys, and they're not necessarily your guys. And I know that term can be misconstrued sometimes, but still, that part, it's like, okay, I know exactly what I need to do, where I need to be, because this team needs a lot of work. But as things have evolved with this roster, trying to pick those spots, I suppose, coming in and not micromanaging, but knowing when you really need to be that loud voice for this team, when you have so many of those leaders.
It's a different type of hard.
Yeah.
When I first, much of this podcast, even though we got it started about a year after I had already been here, right? Every day, I knew exactly what to do when we first got here. You could see it. You could see which players were not committed. You could see where the recruiting needed to change for us to take it in the direction we wanted to. Not trying to throw shade on previous recruiting or staffs or anything like that. But there were, I think we set the record in the conference that year when I took over for guys jumping into the portal in between, in the transition from Coach McCaffrey to me. And so there was just this kind of fractured, beaten down team that lacked culture because a whole new coaching staff came in. And so I could see where I needed to be, what I needed to be doing. I had incredible frustrations because there were players fighting me on that. I didn't know them. I didn't know their parents. I didn't recruit them. I was trying to earn their trust, and that's not always easy, especially when a program's been kind of beaten down for years. So, and then this past off season, I haven't talked to Lindsay Oates about this or said, hey, would you be my mentor? But because she's been so successful and so consistent here, and I think that when I watch her coach and listen to her speak, I think that we have a lot of the same approaches and philosophies. And I think that also from just a demeanor standpoint, we're similar, right? And so when she talks about coaching, I get a lot out of it. And she actually has kind of put herself in a leadership position in the department. She gets all the head coaches together once a month, and we have some really excellent talks. And because she has so much institutional knowledge, I learned a lot from her, and those are really valuable to me. But so this past maybe 2 months ago or so, we were just kind of going around the table, and she facilitates much of the meeting. And she said, well, what are you working on, Ed? And, you know, I explained what I was just explaining to you, where it's like, I can feel the players leading this team, and I keep looking for opportunities to step forward, but I keep finding myself step back, and I'm worried about that. And she, you know, it's going to haunt me because she said, in hindsight, the times when I've stepped back are the times I regret the most.
Mm.
And I know that, and that's actually why I'm bringing it up. But, you know, like, she's not always, you know, in her approach, her style is not to tell you how to do things, right? Like, we're there as head coaches and peers. We're not telling each other how to do things. We're just kind of sharing our own insights. But with how quickly she responded that way, it kind of still haunts me, and I'm looking so hard. But I know, and I think she would agree, you're just as likely to mess things up by stepping forward when and where you shouldn't. And you're going to, you know, basically hold back some of that team leadership if you do that at the wrong time.
Man, there's a lot of buttons to press. And that would be, you know, you as a leader, and then when you have these leader get-togethers, when all these coaches are sitting around, that has to kind of mess with your mind a bit too, because you're trying to figure out your philosophy. Obviously, you have your philosophy, but that's going to change and that's going to evolve with every roster. There might be a time where, I hope this doesn't happen, where, you know, you have a lot more young guys that are not as well, you know, versed in the leadership role, where suddenly it's like, man, this group, I have to kind of be more hands-on. So being able to find that, what does that do? You said it still kind of haunts you, messes with you.
Yeah.
How do you overcome that? I mean, are you talking to your coaches more? I mean, obviously talking about it on this podcast might be therapeutic too.
Yeah, just, you know, I think that as coaches, we get what we emphasize. I think that, you know, going back to kind of Lindsay's comment, I've been there too, but I wasn't vigilant in those moments either. You know, I wasn't purposefully stepping back as much as maybe losing the reins inadvertently, you know? And so I do feel like we are on it right now, but that could just change in an hour. It could change in a week. A few years ago, I saw, we've talked about before, I worked for Jim Harbaugh at San Diego, and he, you know, his words are, and it actually comes from his dad who taught him a lot of the philosophy, and they have very similar personality. But, you know, attack every day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. You may have heard that, mm-hmm. or read that, heard him say that. And so when I bumped into him out on the road recruiting somewhere, you know, I asked the rhetorical question we all ask, how's it going? You know, what's up? And he said, there's just something coming around the corner. Things are too good right now, you know?
Oh, wow.
And that's Jim, you know, that's how he talks, and he's exciting to be around. And that's what I feel like. Things are too good right now. They're going too good. And, I've got to be extra vigilant. And I think that's the place to be. As long as I can stay vigilant and not get too comfortable with where I think this team is at.
That is fascinating to hear that. Because when things are bad, you know, it's like, hey, we got work to do. We know where we are. We have to, when we're not feeling good about the roster or the staff or whatever, well, it's like, well, we got nowhere to go but up.
Yeah.
So that's not maybe in the back of your mind all the time. You just know there's a lot of work to do. But when things are, as you said, like, feels like things are too good right now. We got a great group of guys that we really trust. What's going to happen?
Yeah.
And that's a battle that you know, on the other side of that, I guess it's a good problem to have, but it still kind of feels like or sounds like it's kind of a problem.
I think if I can articulate each day kind of what we're doing to ward off that danger. And so like yesterday, for example, and this is the reason why I'm confident but vigilant, but yesterday, for example, we've got a position where I think we could use one or two more players. And I'm not going to go into details because it's just probably for our current team or parents listening, it might give the wrong impression. But anyway, there's a position where I think we could use one or two more guys, mostly for depth, like feel good, feel like we have winning players. If we stay away from injuries, we're good. But, you know, the guys that are available at this time of year, there's potentially a real team chemistry risk. Mm. You know, this is not the time for serious college football players to not have a home. You know what I mean? And so we turned, you know, I rejected some guys that the staff had worked really hard on. And basically just out of fear of like, I don't want a kid around here coming in here and complaining about Greeley, complaining about our team culture. We're trying to catch him up to speed on everything these guys have worked so hard on. And we demotivate our own players because you got to remember we have, you know, out of our 105 players on the roster, there's 20, 25 of those guys that are fighting for recognition, scholarship, playing time. And when you bring a guy in over the top of them, it sends a certain kind of message. And I don't know that this is the time of year that I want to send that message. And so we're still going to recruit every day, still going to look for opportunities. But I'm just giving you one example, just in the recruiting. I mean, yeah. there's dozens of aspects of the program that we work on every day. And just in recruiting, that's one where we really had some difficult conversations yesterday.
Well, I would imagine you have to be careful too, because guys that are available now, there's a reason those guys might be available now.
100%, yeah.
So are you looking for, if you were to bring a guy on at this time of year, are you looking for some kind of extreme circumstance? You know, hey, why aren't you on a team right now? Why aren't you playing? And Are you looking for whatever, maybe had a family situation or injury, whatever. Are you really digging into that kind of thing, trying to figure out why aren't you on a team? Because that concerns me if I'm going to insert you with my guys.
I think the correct dynamic for us right now is the coaches just need to look first for good players that are available. You know, good players that would improve our team, improve our depth chart on one of our positions, and then start to get ahead of me, the things that I'm going to start looking at, GPA, character references, history. You know, we don't want a guy that's on his third school. Like, that's a guy that's a pattern of not working out. Could totally be circumstance. I have rejected and passed on hundreds of players, if not more, during my time that would have been really high character kids, right? But there are patterns that develop. And when you're talking about recruiting, it's not an exact science. You're playing the odds. And just like an employee that's jumping jobs every 12, 24 months, and they've got a resume that's just all over the place in the last 6 years, you got to be concerned about that. Yeah. They may be unbelievable. They may save your business, take it to a new level. They may stay there for the next 30 years, right? But over time, when you look at somebody who's got a resume that's all over the place and changing jobs every few months, over time, you're generally going to have more problems than solutions.
A lot of times, everything you need to know sometimes is right there on that piece of paper when you're looking at a resume. When it's like, yeah, they jumped for, oh, they're great in the interview. They seem like an awesome person, but this is their, you know, seventh job in 10 years or whatever, seventh look. A lot of times I can tell you all you need to know.
Yeah. And academics are the same. You know, the transcript tells us a lot. Anybody can get a bad grade. I've done it. I've been there. We all know what it's like to struggle. And yet, you know, the difference to me between recruiting a 3-5 player and a 2-5 in terms of, you know, I've been doing it so long and we'll continue to do it. If you bring 100 2.5 players in and 100 3.5 GPA players in over the course of 10 years, the amount of difference in problems you're going to have with the 2.5 GPA versus the 3.5 GPA is enormous. Yeah. And by the way, I'm using those GPAs very deliberately in this podcast, letting everyone know that's listening. We had a 2.5 team GPA in my first year here. We are now 3.5 team GPA.
Well, and that tells you so much because in college, and from my experience, I didn't go to college to be a rocket scientist or anything. So, I mean, it's not like I was doing the most difficult classes in the history of the world. But I will say from my experience, I think 80 to 90% of getting through school on my side, like a regular student, is just showing up and going to class, just doing the work.
Yeah.
You don't have to be like extra super smart, that much smarter than everybody. So when you look at those GPA, I mean, obviously you look at that and say, these guys are showing up. They're going to classes. They're doing all the things that they're supposed to. They're getting their stuff in on time. And that tells you a lot about their character.
Yeah. You know, it sometimes gets a bad connotation, but the phrase punch the clock, you know, yeah. the guys that come in and just punch the clock. There's something to be said for that as just a first step toward being a competent, productive, high performer. We all have bad days. Our motivation is not a linear. You know what I mean? It's not a straight line. It's up and down. But I think that just having that first habit of showing up to class, of not missing any assignments. Okay, now can you become a guy who, when you've got a 79 late in the semester, you're trying to get to 80, or are you saying, yeah, I've got like 8 percentage points here before I get to a D. I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, are you coasting with a 79 or are you saying I can get a B?
Mm-hmm.
Are you coasting with an 89? Or are you saying I can get an A if I finish strong? And that's kind of, you know, I think it's just levels, and it exists too in football. You know, like I talk to the guys a lot about resetting goals, how important that is in college, because for the longest time, they all had a goal just to get a scholarship, just to play D1 football. Hey, that's done. That's in the past. You got to reset your goal. And then if it's to become a starter and you become a starter, you better reset the goal quickly, mm-hmm. all right? Or else you're going to, at that point, you know, we have a saying, we didn't invent it, right? Like some coach said it to me 100 years ago, but if you're green, you're growing. If you're ripe, you're rotten.
Mm. So let me piggyback off of one of the things you talked about with your coaching, when your staff, when they're recruiting guys, and you said there's a couple of guys that your staff worked really hard to recruit.
Yes.
And then you got to kind of come in and say, not the right time. How is that met by your coaching staff?
It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard. And so I try to give them analogies, right? Like, you know, just yesterday, I used these words like, we have the players that it takes to win right now. And we have the coaches too. And when I say we have the coaches, you guys all want to believe me. If I say, hey, you know, we're struggling as a staff, we need to change direction. I'm gonna bring in an analyst. I got to pay him six figures to kind of oversee our offense or defense or something. You're all going to be demotivated by that, right? Like some of you will respond and work even harder and try to prove me wrong, or you'll buy into the analyst and their experience and can make us better. But there's also a real threat that demotivates us, derails us, gets us off track. I believe in you guys. I believe in the team we have right now. And I'm not saying, like, as I sit here on this podcast and say to you, like, we're not going to add a player this summer. Like, well, theoretically, we could add somebody, but I'm going to be so picky about this, right? Like, all the boxes have to be checked. If we add somebody, I can tell you it will be a high performer, great student with some type of unusual issue that I can explain why they would be available this time of year.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's fine. Well, that's interesting too, because again, you know, you got coaches. Recruiting seems like it never stops.
Is that a
daily thing? Like every single day, no matter what time of year you're in?
Not only that, I could tell you the time of year in the calendar, and then we can break that down even further. Like, are we talking about current high school freshmen? Are we talking about current junior college freshmen? Are we talking about current, you know, like rising high school seniors? There's a different process and a different calendar and different work being done for all of that. And then we have our camp schedule, our own camps here on campus, but also camps that our coaches go and visit during the summer as guest coaches. And there's recruiting that takes place in those realms.
Well, and also re-recruiting too, trying to make sure the guys on the roster are sticking around too.
100%. There's within recruiting, there's motivation, right? Like, the moment that we get a guy kind of on the hook, you almost start de-recruiting him. And then once they sign, it's immediately de-recruiting. And I don't mean like we're pulling the rug out from under them. It's just like, okay, like, that's done. You signed. Congratulations. What now?
Mm-hmm.
You're 198 pounds. We need you at 207 by the time you report here next month. Like, that is what we call the de-recruiting process, where, okay, now you want to set up that dynamic that that's going to make them successful going forward, which is proud of where we've been, proud of what I've accomplished, but there's more.
When does that transition? What is that transition like? You and I were just talking about our goofy segment where we review random sports movies this summer on the whole show. We do it on Fridays at 1. We were just talking about Moneyball for a moment. And I think about a lot of, you know, Billy Bean, Brad Pitt's character, talking about being recruited. You know, he'd have those scouts sitting in his living room and they're like, we love you, you're amazing. Well, when he signs, something changes from, we love you, you're awesome, great, you're going to be here, too. Get your crap together, man. Like, mm-hmm. It's got to go. What is that? What is that process like from the niceties that go on when you're recruiting to, all right, now it's time to get serious. You're going to see serious Ed Lamb now.
Yeah. And that's the issue right there. I feel like when the game has passed the coach by, the older coach, and I'm getting there now, right? I'm in my early 50s. Like, some guys at my age, that becomes the criticism. Okay, the game has passed them up. It's not the X's and O's. In fact, usually the more old school you are X's and O's wise, the more, you know, back to the basics you are, the more of an advantage you have. Mm. And the game goes in cycles that way. When the game is truly passed up a coach, it's because you've become a factory and you're plugging the players into that factory without considering them individually. So the answer to your question is that for every player, it's completely different. And so I'll give you an example. One of the players that's just, I mean, from day one when they came in, just outperformed, exceeded, didn't need a lot of direction from us, responded. It's like every little thing you've said as a coach, he heard, adopted, and ran with it, you know, and that's a Blake Westlin. Blake Westlin is, a kind of like the perfect example. If you had to put a guy out there and say, this is what we're trying to do here, a Colorado kid, a high school quarterback that we recruited just as an athlete and said, not sure if you're going to play quarterback. In fact, probably won't. We'll find a position for you as you go. Great student, great leader, multi-sport guy, comes in at, you know, 205 probably, let's say, now 265, playing both ways, offense and defense. He is one of the very top students on our team. I don't think he's had a B in his time here. All A's, right? And for me working with him most recently, because at about halfway through the season last year, he kind of took over as a starter as well, you know, became a starter and then started to perform really well on the field. Okay, now for me to motivate him, yes, I don't want him to settle. I don't think he will, but, you know, still I'm going to do my part to make sure of that and encourage that. But it's about reference groups. And I think that's, as a coach, if I'm just constantly like beating on every kid in the same way, okay, now I'm out of touch or the game has passed me by. But I need to treat Blake Westlin different than I treat other players. And in Blake's case, because he's probably ascended to the top of his if he's only comparing himself to guys on our team and striving for a starting job, that road just ended for him. He's got to take a different fork in the road now and say, okay, well, what is my new reference group? Is that the players that went to the combine last year at defensive end, the very best players in the country at my position? Is that NFL players? And so those are the types of things with him that I'm working on. And hopefully with every player, I know them that same way. I get to know them and I know the levers that I need to pull for them.
I always kind of know, you know, when you talk about leaders on this team, and this has been consistent for the past however many years we've been doing this podcast now, you do bring up an O lineman or a defensive lineman.
That's right.
More often than not.
Yeah.
You know, and again, that's not you've certainly talked a lot about your skill guys and quarterbacks and things like that, but unprompted, you typically will bring up a Blake Westlin or one of your stud offensive linemen as the leaders, because that checks out with your philosophy from the get-go. Is that's what a lot of coaches say that, a lot of teams say that, we got to get better up front, we got to do this. I hear you talk about your lines, you have that like that glow in your eye when you're talking about Blake Westlin, you're talking about any member of your lineman, O-line, D-line. So you can tell, like, those are the guys that you want. At UNC, those are the guys you want to be the leaders of this team.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just so much like the like a race car. You know what I mean? The driver gets all kinds of credit, but the drivers will tell you, you got to have the right car. And I think that car starts with where the rubber meets the road. That's the offensive lineman, the defensive lineman, the big guys. If they're right, if they're the best in the league, then everyone else is going to shine.
Coach, I love talking all things, you know, football, UNC related, everything there. Obviously, that's the main point of this podcast. I'm getting very excited for that first game, that Friday night game against Weber State. Cannot wait for that. But I got to get, you know, your thoughts on, I'm sure you watched some of it or clips of some of it. You had the congressional hearing, was that Tuesday, for the Save College Sports Act? Did you look at any of that? Did you pay any attention to that?
I did. Yeah, read up on it. I didn't see it live. I don't know if it was a broadcast live.
It was. I'm not like deep into politics.
Yeah.
So when someone walks into my office, it was, I think it started at like 8 Mountain Time or something. Yeah. I've got half of it. I've started at about 9 o'clock. Someone walks in my office and they're like, are those senators? Like, what are you watching political stuff in here? I'm like, well, yeah, it's crossing over now into the sports world. It was interesting. I'll say that. It was very fascinating.
Yeah, and I'm the same. Like, I'm like, I don't know if I'm wishy-washy, open-minded, what, just central, but like, you know, here on the left of like, you know, equality of opportunity, like, God, that sounds really good, right? Like raising up people who don't have opportunities. That sounds really good. Okay, that's leftist. And then here on the right, like personal accountability and like strong defense and national borders. Like, okay, that sounds good too. And so I oftentimes feel like so I'm not convicted, and it's such a it's such a stark contrast for me, because like in my daily like purpose of being this football coach and father and all the things that I really define myself on, I'm super convicted, right? Like I have way strong opinions, and yet sometimes on the political spectrum, I can really be talked into a lot of support for different viewpoints. And I don't like C-SPAN's not like rolling on, on my office television, but yeah, what a time in college football and college sports because of all the rule changes. I'm so happy to be a head football coach and be able to like try to stay abreast of what's going on, tweak our approaches, and maybe can we somehow find an advantage at a place that doesn't have all the advantages like Northern Colorado. Can some of these rule changes give us the advantage if we adopt appropriately for us? Yeah. At the right time, and can pivot and move, and I think so. I was really intrigued and read up on Coach Saban and some of the other figures in college football that are trying to, in their mind, they're trying to save college sports.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it was interesting. I thought he was very well spoken. Very, everything he said was very interesting and enlightening. But Pete Bevacqua, the Notre Dame athletic director, I thought it sounds like he's more on the side of, yeah, we got to get this in. We need legislation. We need all this. It sounds like he's on the same side as Nick Saban. But in part of his dialogue with the senators, he did mention something like, well, in a perfect world, if we want more eyeballs, a super league with all these teams playing each other, Ohio State, Notre Dame, that would be the way to do it. However, I don't think that would be good.
Yeah.
And so I thought that to me was really, because Notre Dame's just interesting, this whole thing, because they're an independent. What would happen if there's a Super League? Where would they go? They have a lot to gain and a lot to lose. If this new legislator, these bullet points actually come to fruition, I would imagine that would mean Notre Dame probably needs to get in line and get into a conference somewhere, because they're also talking about pooling media rights, where each conference doesn't get their own negotiation team. They got to go with college football as a whole. Obviously, the SEC and the Big Ten have problems with that. I would imagine Notre Dame would have a problem with that, too. So that's why a lot of this was interesting. I'm like, wait a second, you should be on the SEC and Big Ten side, but it sounds like you're kind of not. But you also acknowledge that a Super League might be fascinating.
Yeah, it's okay. I've only met Coach Saban once. And when I hear him talk about football, defense, he's a defensive guy, he's a secondary guy. We have the same mentor, Coach Saban worked for Dave Adolph, who I worked for at San Diego. Dave Adolph was the D coordinator at the Cleveland Browns, and that was back when you had smaller staffs. Dave was the defensive coordinator and linebackers. Bill Belichick was the defensive line coach, and Nick Saban was the secondary coach for the Cleveland Browns. That's my tree. Like, you know, like so many of our defensive philosophies are the same. Love listening to Coach Saban speak about that. Absolutely can't stand the dynamic in that congressional hearing, because here's the deal. What they're trying to talk about, you know, whether you're talking about the Notre Dame athletic director Saban, they're talking about parity. They're trying to bring back parity and inequality to college football, because they know that eventually that's what the fans are going to want. Like, more fans are going to be more involved. It's just like the difference between baseball. Baseball is losing viewership. It's losing fans because it's out of touch. Big market wins, small market struggles, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse, right? Mm-hmm. Football, the NFL, has locked in parity. The way the teams are drafted, the salary cap, the non-tampering rules for players and coaches. Like, the NFL is a great model for us. And yet you have, when Congress wants to hear about it, they bring in Nick Saban. Like, if Nick Saban gets up there and talks about his experience at Toledo,
yeah,
I'm down,
yeah,
buddy.
Yep.
Because he's going to talk about bringing parity and inclusivity to all of college football. He didn't do that. He's up there talking about Alabama and how, you know, he always had the most resources. He left Toledo because of resources and went to another place. And so good on him. Like, that's been his path. But he's not the guy to stand up there and represent parity.
Yep.
The guy to stand up there and represent parity, bring in the Boise State coach, right?
100%.
That's who I want to hear from. That's who Congress needs to hear from, are the teams and schools and athletic directors that are striving to do everything they can with the resources they have. And those are the fan bases that are in jeopardy if the powers that be take this and run with it to super leagues.
I think, like, the state of Colorado, like, you coaches would be fascinating there to have you, a coach like you, I guess Jim Mora's new to CSU, whatever, but a Jay Norvell when he was with CSU, like, you are the ones. I want to hear all aspects, all sides of it, but I want to hear, Coach, I have a connection. We're in the radio business. This is a locally owned radio station, a lot different than some of your conglomerates. There's not as many people, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
We went to a radio conference, I don't know, 15 years ago in Chicago. And we go to all these different, you know, rooms, and they're, okay, this is about script writing. Yeah. This one's about management, sales, all this stuff. We go to a script writing one about producing commercials. And the guys sitting up there that were hosting this thing, they were writers. They're paid to write copy for radio advertising. Yeah. And so a lot of us that were in the room were also local radio stations. One guy raised his hand and said, because the whole thing was about getting your script writers to really feel what the business is, really get to know the business, blah, 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 giving tips on that. One guy raised his hand, goes, hey, our sales guys are the ones that write the scripts. Yeah. We don't have a script writing team. So how do you advise that? How do you work on that balance between selling and writing? You know what the guy said? The guy at the podium? Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't have any answers for you on that. So I think about that kind of thing, seriously, to make my connection to it, where Nick Saban's up there, Pete Bavak was up there. This is Notre Dame and Alabama legend, you know? So when somebody says, hey, I have a question here about my conference, you know, the Sun Belt or whatever, ooh, I don't really know if I have an answer. Because we're talking about all the big boys, really. We're talking about all the big money, where that is and how to fix it. But you got to start from the ground up to fix this whole thing throughout and not just get the opinions. I do find it interesting to hear the big wigs like, yeah, we got problems. It's like, they don't necessarily have the problem. So we need to be hearing from the ones that are dealing with those actual problems every day.
Yeah, well, their problems are, and you're hearing like Texas Tech, they've got a booster that has, you know, committed to spending at the highest level. Well, now all of a sudden you're hearing him complain because he's committed to make Texas Tech the very best and the highest paid roster every year. But as everybody catches them and passes them, he has to keep raising the bar. And so now you have all these, you know, power players that are worried because it's just skyrocketing. The amount that you've got to spend to stay out in front is skyrocketing. Well, you know what? You created the system, so I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to hear about, you know, how to run a small soda company from Pepsi and Coca-Cola.
Yeah,
like
right.
You know, like Brent Vegan and I, the Montana State head coach, they won the national championship. Good on them. Good. They also spend the most money in the country. Fantastic. I could talk to him about offense, defense all day, right? But most of the job I'm doing and his job, they're not even close to being the same, you know? So we've got to do it our way. And, you know, that's the type of thing you would hear from coaches like that is like, oh, yeah, should I call your secretary? Yeah, I don't have a secretary,
yeah,
bud.
Right.
I am the secretary, nope. So just call me direct.
Yeah, I think we just need a ton of different voices. I know, like, the Pac-12, the new Pac-12 commissioner, Teresa Gould, was there. But again, she's coming from this at, I don't want, my conference just got poached. The whole thing got broken apart like 5 years ago. She's coming from that angle, which is good because that is a problem. I think conferences acting on their own and just doing is certainly an issue. But we need to hear from those other coaches that are dealing with all of the real issues that we are. Yeah, sure. If Alabama has a guy enter the portal, they can replace that guy with money. Tomorrow, yeah. They can replace that guy easily. For teams like yours, you know, teams throughout the state, up in Wyoming too, they lose a key guy. It's a lot more difficult to replace those guys too. So I think those are the stories we would need to be hearing.
Yeah, and they will continue to all these power players will continue to dance around the simple, easy, and now cheaper solution to make the players employees.
Yeah,
to actually give them. Healthcare, retirement, and salary. We are now paying players, I say we, the highest levels, the SEC and the Big Ten, are now paying players in this this system of no guardrails. They're paying them more than they would pay them as employees.
Yeah.
And so if they would make them employees, then the NCAA could put in a salary cap or whoever the governing body is. Now we put in a salary cap. Now we have parity. But guess what? Alabama ain't Alabama anymore when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now for decades, they've had the advantages. They've found the ways to have the advantages. They continue to do that. And now all these power players, they're getting more and more scared, right? Because now you've got the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Indianas, Mark Cuban. Okay, now it's just a straight resource race, and who has more?
This is what I remember saying this when all this was starting to happen years ago when we were talking about NIL. I actually thought this could even things up a little bit. Now, I was kind of naive with how I thought this whole thing was going to go down, but you could have randomly the Mark Cubans. If you have billionaires that are interested in your program, they can... That can be all the difference. Yeah. If we suddenly get 4 or 5 billionaires here that are in Greeley and they just happen to like football, that's probably going to change the way you're doing things too, Coach. I mean, it's not just the lights we're talking about. We're talking about new stadiums. We're talking about everything.
It would have to because I would never hold back the players, but I would – there's a part of me that would die, that would be lost because I've poured everything into a final goal of being able to stand there with a conference championship trophy – and say publicly, we did not recruit a single player with inducement.
Yeah.
We only use scholarship. We have a limited revenue share NIL. We have rewarded those who stay, who excel in our community service and academic programs. We have rewarded them with a very small amount to make their lives a little easier and to afford a steak dinner once a week.
There's your sports movie, as you've always said.
Exactly.
Like, they're not going to write a movie about the team that's supposed to win everything.
Exactly. And so you would, like if a billionaire consortium came to me and said, here's what we're doing going forward. We're going to buy you a team, Coach. It would be wrong of me morally to say, I don't want to do that because that's holding back the players.
Yeah.
Right? Like, let's create those opportunities, right? But as of right now, we're going to be able to play this season with a fourth-year team of guys that we've recruited and developed, and we're going to go up against teams in our league that have spent an insane amount of money relative to what we have, and I can't wait to show our process on the field.
You just give me goosebumps when I'm hearing that too. Yeah. Like, hey, we did it this way because. Yeah. Listen, I love, you know, like there's the stories, there's the Rudy stories, all that stuff, but there's a lot of those aren't real. Like this, you guys, the improve is on. Like, you guys were an improved football team last year. And so that is a realistic, there's a realistic chance that this story, especially in this day and age of we got Nick Saban, we got Notre Dame athletic director, we got senators up there talking. Meanwhile, here's you guys that aren't jumping into that race. You're doing your own thing, trying to stay keep this kind of true to what college sports was supposed to be. That would be the story that when the next big hearing happens in 2 to 3 years, you can point to, hey, here's what happened in Greeley, Colorado. It would be fascinating. I think it would be groundbreaking.
Yeah, you can see how far away we are from solving these problems at the national, congressional, NCAA level. You can see how far away it is, because when you and I sit here and talk about this story that we're building at UNC, that's sports. Before we went on air, we were talking about sports movies, right? And you guys are, you and Tanner are doing a project right now with sports movies.
Yeah.
There are no sports movies about the team with the most resources.
No, no. we're not doing like the Los Angeles Dodgers, how it was built.
Right, exactly.
A lot of money. Oh, it cut in scene. You know, that's you're not typically seeing that.
No, you don't, that's not compelling, right? And so when you talk about, this is what's absurd, when you hear Notre Dame's athletic director talking about television and television rights, like, he's out of touch, right? Mm-hmm. Because the compelling, what has built college football is the number of college football teams and therefore the number of college football fans. And when you start to restrict that to a few teams, it's not going to be like the NFL. All college football fans aren't going to say, oh, I've got to pick one of those 30 teams now to be a fan of. They're going to be fans of their community team, fans of their alma mater. That's how college football works. And they couldn't be more out of touch.
And if the SEC, like, what do you think the chances are that the SEC and the Big Ten actually break away and do their own thing? Like, if you had to put a percentage chance on that in the next 5 years or under?
I think it's probably 70 to 80%. I think they're too powerful not to. It's just, it kind of like, here's another one with baseball. The World Series, the World Championship. I kind of look at that with a little bit of suspicion. When I didn't when I was a kid, but now the world plays baseball. Mm-hmm. There are really good baseball teams around the world. And who's to say that the Dodgers or the Yankees are actually the best team in the world? I don't know that that's true.
Yeah.
You know, you would never do that in soccer, right?
Right.
And so I think that they could, if they create this Super League, great. They'll still have their fans. They'll still make their money. But what about the team that's left out? You know, maybe that is Colorado. Maybe that is Boise State. Maybe that's Oregon State. I don't know who it's going to be, but there's going to be a team with a claim. And how do you rectify that? And how do you make your product that compelling where you start saying, we are the national champion? Well, somebody might have something to say about that.
Yeah, because what I think would be fascinating with this, too, is everyone's just like, we're talking about the football side. If SEC, Big Ten break away, I think it was Iowa State's athletic director. And he had brought up, hey, if they want to go, but you have to take all your sports. You can't just do football. If you want to leave, go. And that would mean your basketball teams are not going to be able to participate in this expanded March Madness tournament coming up. So that would eliminate that. I don't know how they would operate. Are they going to, you know, they're so big. Are they going to get to the point where they're going to be the first ones to start doing, our players are just contracted individuals. They're not even going to school. Do people buy into that as much, or does it become another failed attempt at creating the miniature NFL? Because the AFL, the XFLs, we've seen those happen. They might do it well enough to float, but nobody's really like, oh man, the Minnesota Mud Dogs or whatever. We're not 100% in on that. I almost, at first I was like, ooh, SEC, Big Ten, go do their big thing, and they're going to kill it. They're going to do awesome. Now there's a part of my brain, coach, that's like, I don't know if they don't just dissolve into something different because it's not college and it's not NFL. It's some weird thing in between. I wonder how the casual viewer would view them overall. There might be some sour grapes, too. There might be people that are just like, you guys left college to go do this. I'm not supporting it.
If they do that, the one thing that I believe would save them would be the process of relegation, like the European leagues. You know, if a fan base like a UNC or CSU or whatever had the long-term vision of, okay, if we win and we're successful here, then we move up a level. And by the way, Kentucky is losing at the highest level. They're dropping down. Okay, that would, you could be a long-term fan of a process, and those sports movie stories would be created, even though you have these, you know, ridiculous amounts being spent at this higher level. You could raise yourself up. And by the way, that's like the story of America. You know, so yeah. How do you expect to keep long-term television viewership and interest if you're going to artificially cut down the peasants? You know, that's not American. It's the antithesis of American culture. And so, yeah, I thought, you know, again, big fan of Coach Saban. I thought it was a clown show. The congressional hearing, I thought was a clown show.
It does. It just. Even though the things that he says might make sense, but when you look at who it is, it's like, yeah, but you're not coming from it from that place.
Yeah,
you know, you're not talking
it's
about...
It's not his fault.
Yeah, right.
They asked him to do the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It would be like if we're talking about parity in the Big Sky and controlling expense. Like, here's how absurd it is. Nick Saban's a legend, and so they asked him to speak, and there he goes. And you know, maybe he wanted to, maybe he didn't. But if you wanted to get Big Sky spending costs under control... Would you bring in the Montana State AD and head coach? No.
No.
That's dumb. Nobody would do that.
Yeah.
And yet Congress did it. Well, we had Nick Saban. You know, I imagine these senators coming home to their spouses like, yeah, I shook hands with Coach Saban, seven-time national champion.
And that was some of the other stuff that irritated me too, because they keep saying, we only have a limited amount of time for each senator to talk. But they all got to come in and they brought a player there who plays for Utah.
Yeah.
And he was in one of the senators was like, before we start, you know, who's your favorite team? And he puts out like a hat that he brought with him. And the guy's like, I play for Utah, so that's my favorite team. And then they of course have to do the corny like, oh wow, you have a future in politics, young man.
Yes.
like that kind of stuff to me. It was like this, aw shucks, we got Nick Saban here. We got these players here.
Right.
I couldn't help but feel like it, based on everything that I watched, actually made me feel worse about this whole thing going forward. So I don't know if it passes. I doubt it does. I guess Senator Cruz is meeting with the Big Ten and the SEC this week. But I would imagine they're going to say, yeah, we'll be willing to basically work with everything until you change the media rights deal, because we're not signing that. That, I believe, is the biggest thing they want to change. So yeah. I don't see it happening. So it'll be fascinating. Coach, this was fun today, man. I love getting into this stuff with you. And here in a couple weeks, we've got, I'm assuming you're still in for this. We've got the NOCO Autism Connection, the Dad's Night Out. You did this with us last year, and you were the star of the show. It was great. And I know this is something that's kind of cool that we can hopefully keep building on.
All the dads, that as soon as they showed up, they said, oh, yeah, you're Coach Lamb. Where's Brady Hole? So I felt like you were the star of the show.
I don't think so. Why? Go back and look at those pictures. Look at those videos. Everyone's just surrounding you. Because I think it's cool because they get to talk a little football with you. They get to talk about balance and all that stuff. And I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Yeah, it's pretty special to visit with other parents that are struggling with, you know, like special needs, unique needs, whatever, because it's all children have unique and special needs. But, you know, there are some special circumstances that a lot of the guys in that room were dealing with. So it's really cool to hear what other people are dealing with.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's harder, and sometimes it's, you know, there's other things that feel like, okay, well, they've got, they're doing well in that area.
Yeah.
And maybe we can get to that part. So I really enjoyed it. But shout out to Carmen Peak putting that thing together. And I appreciate the invitation to be a part of it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And if folks are interested, NOCO Autism Connection. If you just Google that, you'll be able to find all the information there. Coach, another great episode, my friend. We'll look forward to doing it again next week.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.